And she went with a group of friends to a Sounders game, and they passed a homeless guy sitting under a business awning, and all of a sudden the guy yells out, "Carrie, is that you?" And her friends were like, "How do you know this guy?" And she responded, "Ray! Ray!" And they had a conversation. Well, she cast his check every month. He always came to her window. We have seen Lazarus or Sister Lazarinus. I made that name up. They lie under newspaper for warmth. They have a dog as their best friend because human beings won't address them. I want you to know, in penning that sentence, I condemn myself. I don't address them. We can hear their tin cup rattling for change, for coinage. Major cities find Lazarus and Lazarinus everywhere. And small Ephratas find Lazarus and Lazarinus walking the streets. And we tend to judge, don't we? It's their own fault. Choices made, one too many pills or one too many drinks, needles. They need to go to agencies that can help. They need to get off their butts and find a job. Don't give them money. They'll just go buy themselves some booze. I'm always reminded when I think of that, C.S. Lewis was criticized by friends as he was walking by a Lazarus with them, and he gave him some cash. And his friends were upset and criticized him, and he was like, "Well, better he buy booze for himself than me go buy a bottle of port for myself." My friend's brother, Tom Barton, Tim came and spoke here, pastored at Canby Alliance Church. He lived on the streets as a Vietnam vet, unable to cope. Boise, Idaho. He begged money while being screamed at, dehumanized, and you know what he was doing? And I just found this out within the past few months talking to Tim. Tom is dead now. He was raising money for his homeless friend that he cared for out in this island, and his homeless friend, who was a vet himself, was dying of ALS. He was raising money to care for his ALS friend. The worst disease you could ever get. Let that settle into our souls. This is what N.T. writes about this passage. He just says, "Lazarus people camp in tin shacks on the edge of large, rich cities. From the door of their tiny makeshift shelters, you can see the high-rise hotels and offices where, if they are lucky, just one member of their family might work as a cleaner. They have been born into debt, and in debt they will stay. Through the fault of someone rich and powerful who signed away their rights, their lives in effect a generation or two ago, in return for arms." Do you realize how much money our country spends on military? More than Russia and North Korea and China combined? Or for a new presidential palace or a fat Swiss bank account? N.T. Wright writes. And even if rich and poor don't always live side by side so blatantly, he says, the television brings us together. So we all know Lazarus, because Lazarus is our neighbor. Luke, just prior to Jesus telling the story of the rich man and Lazarus, gives us teaching that is very uncomfortable, because this is very uncomfortable, on wealth. Chapter 16, verse 10 through 13. We can't be trusted with true riches, which is the gospel truth, if we handle earthly wealth tight-fistedly. We can't be handled with the truth of the gospel if we are tight-fisted with wealth. And then Jesus said, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and money. Now, understand here, these are two teams. You can look at it that way. And they're pulling for our loyalty. I'm a Tiger fan, but I'm a Mariner fan, and they're both going in the playoffs. They both pull for my loyalty. The way it's always stated, those are two royal gods seeking our devotion. And we can't give equal devotion. And money is the spiritual power that seeks to dominate our lives. It's a rival spiritual power to God. Money's not just a means of exchange. That's a very capitalistic Western idea. It is a principality and power. The money spirit will push us away from following Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. Just ask Judas. I've titled the message Diving into Dives this morning. Diving into Dives. Dives is the Latin word for rich guy, so the parable gets named Dives and Lazarus, historically. Lazarus is a variation of Eleazar, which means God helps. This story or parable, it's debated on if it's a story or a parable, and I'm not going to go into that, opens with a brief but brilliant picture of a narcissistic, self-indulgent, power-hungry, authoritative rich guy that has pockets full of cash, living in extreme wealth every day. Every day. Who surrounds himself with the glitter of gold. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day, it says in the text. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived luxuriously every day. He had other clothes to wear. But the grammar of the text tells us every day he wore a suit made from Brioni's men embroidered herringbone dinner suit by Bergdorf Goodman that cost $22,000. There's a suit you can buy that costs $22,000. That's the purple that he was wearing. Every day he wore purple, the most expensive fabric of his time in the ancient world. He wanted people to know how much money he had. And get this, the phrase fine linen. It is from the Greek word bousos, which is a transliteration of the Hebrew word, which is butz, B-U-T-Z, fine linen. It refers to quality Egyptian cotton used for the best underwear, what covers our butts. This story tells us that we can see his high-class wardrobe, but hidden underneath are underpants that could feed your family for a month. That's the way it starts off. That's what Jesus says. And notice the phrase, every day. He didn't observe the Sabbath. He was doing this every day. He wasn't a worshiper. He just lived this luxurious lifestyle. His employees would not have been given a day of rest to go worship. They had to work because every day this was his life. His wealth worship allowed him to ignore the commands of God and do and spend however the hell he wanted. And hell seems to be where he ends up in the story. Notice that this man, in all of his opulence, is puny and insignificant. We don't even know his name. We don't know his name. But we know the name of the beggar. Poor Lazarus. We know the name of the beggar. The one who God helps. And I want to say, this is so interesting to me. And I really never realized this in all my years until I got to studying this past week. Lazarus is the only person named in all of the parables of Jesus. No other parable names anybody that Jesus tells. But here, Lazarus. Jesus places a poor man and a wealthy side by side. He dignifies the poor by a name but leaves the rich nameless before the idolatry of the dollar. And we are told that Lazarus was laid at the rich man's gate. Laid. That's a passive term. He was laid there by someone else. It's a gated community. You can't just pull up into the driveway and go up and knock on the door. It's one of those, you have to be welcomed into the driveway. You have to be strong enough to get on your feet and speak into the little box and tell them who you are so they'll open the gate and you can go in. But Lazarus, the one who God helps, was laid at the gate. He had to be carried there. The community of love carried him. He just wanted to eat the food tossed to the dogs, tossed in the dumpster of the alley. And when I wrote that phrase, and I didn't put this in my notes, it just jumped to me, and I probably should have written it. But I remember when the city of Ephrata, God bless them, but they closed down the dinner. That's why we have the dinner here at this church, and we've gone through all the things to get the dinner, the kitchen, up to code, because they wouldn't let us serve the poor at the Four Square Church because the kitchen didn't meet all the code standards. And I was so mad, I said, let's just get a big dumpster and let's put it outside and turn it on its side so it's open and it's a dumpster, and we'll go outside and we'll cook for them outside, and they can go outside and get the food outside and then just bring it inside. So we're not breaking any codes because all these people are allowed to dumpster dive. I was so mad. Can you tell? We are told the dogs came and licked his sores. The only person in the community who could care for Lazarus is the rich man. He has all the resources, but the dogs cared. Canine spirituality. Don't judge the dogs, judge the rich man. Dogs lick their own sores. When they lick people, it's an act of love and favor. Did you know that saliva contains endogenous peptide antibiotics? Licking dogs helped wounds heal faster. Dogs have been found buried with the dead in antiquity because it is assumed that these dogs helped lick the wounds of the affirmed and they helped bring relief. They were seen as animals of grace. So what this story told by Jesus preaches is that dogs are far more Christ-like than the rich man. The dogs have grace and compassion. The rich man is not concerned with the neighbor at the gate. The rich man was clothed in purple garments while Lazarus was clothed with sores. Lazarus, we are told, died and was carried by angels to Abraham's side. Abraham is a pretty important person we know in Jewish history, and Abraham honors and welcomes the beggar and infirmed Lazarus. The rich man also died and found himself in torment, and he was dying of thirst, and he's powerless, and he appears to be by himself while Lazarus is with Abraham. And all the rich man's life, he was blind to the needs of those around him. And every day he calculated what his investments had done for him. Lazarus is at his gate, and he didn't toss him a penny. He didn't even toss him the scraps he was given to the dogs. And he knew Lazarus. He called out to Abraham, send Lazarus with water. I got my mouth so cottony. Just send him with a finger dipped in water and have him put it on my tongue. He knows his name. The annoying bum outside of his gate. But here's the interesting thing, that never in this whole story that Jesus tells, never once does the rich man talk with Lazarus or to Lazarus. He never talks with Lazarus or to him. Or even more importantly, he never asked Lazarus to forgive him. Jesus is making a point that the security and comfort of riches can make us numb to the needs of the less unfortunate. It is like Lazarus is not real to the rich man unless Lazarus does his bidding. The rich man wants Lazarus to be sent to serve him with water in his misery. He wants Lazarus to tell his family about this afterlife scenario so they will change their ways. We're told even if someone raises from the dead, they won't believe. If they don't believe the prophets and the law, they're not going to believe unless someone raises from the dead. And just think, Lazarus is raised from the dead in the Gospel of John, a Lazarus. Jesus is raised from the dead, and still people don't believe. He puffs his chest out in prideful arrogance, this rich man, demanding that the semi-human person, not an equal human person, Lazarus, does his bidding. The rich man is a son of Abraham. He calls Abraham father. He's playing the Jewish card. He's an American Christian. He flies the flag of loyalty. He's living the Judean dream of wealth. His whole life preaches success. He lives in a mansion that houses a couple of people. He rides the best chariots and dresses in the latest fashion. Why on God's green earth is he suffering in the afterlife? This story should cause us all to pause in quiet reflection. You see, in Jeremiah that was read by Isla, we've all been Lazarus at some point, and we've all been the rich man at some point. And we've all had rich men in our lives when we were Lazarus. I mean, we can enter this story on so many different levels, every one of us. And Jeremiah, he's telling the story, and get this, just let's put the story of Jeremiah in the context of Israel and Palestine at war. Israel's bombing the snot out of Palestine. And this huge, beautiful hotel that was for sale is crushed to the ground. It's crushed to the ground. And God tells a Palestinian Christian, I have goblets that are beautiful, that were handmade by Palestinian Christians when we were in Bethlehem. And he tells them, okay, go buy that building. Go take out the hundreds of thousands of dollars and buy that building. Why? Because God has sees you're gonna do that as an act of hope and faith because I am gonna restore. And that's what Jeremiah does. He has to go, he's 17 pieces of silver. He goes and buys that land, he puts the deed in a thing and he buries it in a jar and he buries it. And he does it, and it's the most stupid financial decision ever, but yet he was banking everything on the character of God and hope. That's Lazarus sitting outside that gate. He's banking on the fact that justice will be served sometime, somehow. And he doesn't say a thing. He doesn't challenge the rich man. So just take a couple minutes of silence, looking at the picture on the screen. And ask yourself, where are you in this story right now? Are you the rich man or woman who has people in your life that you need to reach out to and you've been resistant? Are you a person sitting there waiting for God to act? You see, there's a psalm that I've prayed this week. It's Psalm 73. Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped, and I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. You can look out and see these people that don't follow God and they're prospering like crazy. You're Lazarus on the outside and you're looking at the prosperous. For they have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. They are not in trouble as others are. They are not stricken like the rest of mankind. They're prideful in their necklace. Violence covers their garment. Their eyes swell out through fatness. Their heart overflows with folly. They scoff and speak with malice. Loftily, they threaten oppression. They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongues strut through the earth. Therefore, his people turn back to them and find no fault in them. And they say, how can God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the wicked. Always at ease, they increase in riches. All in vain have I kept my heart clean and washed my hands in innocence. For all day long, I have been stricken and rebuked every morning. Can you think of the Lazarus? He's stricken every morning. If I had said, I will speak thus, I would have betrayed the generation of your children. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I discerned therein. In other words, he went to worship, like we're doing this morning, and we get a perspective that it's not just the immediate, but it is the future promise and hope in a God who has promised to deliver and to save, and to restore, and to do justice. That's what we do. We bury, we buy the land back and we bury it, even though the land is being destroyed. Malcolm Guite. So in this psalm, he rails against the blind injustice, as it seemed to him, when men who lived by exploitation did so well, at the expense of those they cheat. But then you showed him truth beyond the daily veil, how wickedness will vanish like a dream, and when we wake in you, all will be well. Take a moment before we continue the message and think about where you are in the story. There's a new book that's out that I'm starting to read. It's called From Dropout to Doctorate, Breaking the Chains of Educational Injustice. Breaking the Chains of Educational Injustice. Author is Terrence Lester, and he writes about his story. He grew up in extreme poverty. He grew up as Lazarus. His mom worked her tail off just to try to put food on the table. He attended school dirty and smelly. Why? Because they didn't have any way to clean the clothes. There was no washer, dryer. There was no way to do it. He talks about the trauma of this in his life, of going to school filthy. Educational trauma. He awoke wondering where his breakfast would come from. Poverty trauma. He writes out of his PhD research about growing up with poverty trauma. It's fascinating. He was Lazarus at the gate of the wealthy, outside the gated community. And he writes how he came out of his broken, impoverished situation because he had rich men not willing to live in mansions. They were rich, but they didn't ignore Lazarus. They didn't drive fancy cars or turn a nose up to interruptions in their lives. They didn't let the dogs be the human ones. They were the human ones. He talked about Dr. Joe. He told Dr. Joe after a class, because he had started college late in life, that he would have to drop out of college because his car broke down and he and his wife were penniless to fix it. So he couldn't even get to class. He just said, I have to quit. And Dr. Joe told him, you know, wait after class, we'll talk, you can walk with me. And he led him to his car. And Dr. Joe told him, yeah, you need to understand, Terrence, my wife's a nurse, and she drives by here every day on her way to work. She can drop me off. And he held out the keys to his car, and he dropped them in his hand, and he says, you can use it as long as you need. For a whole year, Terrence used that professor's car. He, at 20, thought college was a good idea, so he had to go back to high school at 20. He had to go back, and somehow they managed to claim him as a fifth-year senior, and he was so embarrassed. He was made fun of, a 20-year-old, a fifth-year senior, back at college. or I mean back in high school. He had a female English teacher, and she felt his unease. She empathized with his shame. You know, there are thoughts floating that empathy is a problem in America. Too much empathy. There's just too much. Well, let me say as a pastor that if God doesn't have an empathetic heart, there is no cross. There is no cross unless God is empathetic. That is a prophetic word. Dives lacked empathy and found himself in Jesus' story parched and lonely. Terrence's teacher felt his struggle and pulled him inside, and she said, "Listen, I'm for you. We're going to do this together, and you're going to get through, and you're going to succeed." A teacher. When Terrence turned his life over to Jesus Christ and landed in a local church, guess who was sitting in the pew across the aisle? That English teacher. He was struggling to make his college payments. He had been working at this warehouse. It was a warehouse. But he realized he just had to drop out because he couldn't make any payments. He couldn't pay for what he needed to for his wife. And his wealthy boss, Mr. Easton, heard of this struggle. And he told him that he wasn't going to drop out of school. "There is no way, Terrence, you are dropping out of school." He said, "I have it covered." In his book, he writes that 2 years ago, Mr. Easton died. And his last text to Terrence, his last text, this is what he said: "Terrence, you are the best investment I have ever made. The best investment I have ever made." What would have happened if the rich man Dives had treated Lazarus like that? This story, this parable, it's not to be completely pushed into some afterlife scenario. We're to ask, are we living our lives so there's a chasm between us and the world's Lazarus, so our economic comfort, middle class status is protected? Or are we going to look out at the world differently and see the naked and the sick and the demented and the desperately poor, God's image bearers, and invade those situations with incarnational gospel love? That's the question of the text. That's our question. Where do we find ourselves in the story? In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.